Metaphors for Today, Lives of Today, as we continue this trek of Armadoxy, looking at the lives of priests and stories that inspire us. This is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the psychological, the spiritual, and everything in between. This is episode number 528 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
If anyone advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with success unexpected in common hours. Henry David Thoreau. He prefaces it by saying, I learned this at least by my experiment. And that experiment, of course, was his life, was experimenting with life itself. And I love this passage. It came to me just this past week as we learned the passing of, I can't even say he was a dear friend. An acquaintance? I don't know if that's even right, because we were bound together much stronger than acquaintance, but we didn't know each other well either, and that is the Reverend Father Dajad Davidian. He was the priest over on the East Coast in Watertown, Massachusetts, and I had a chance to meet him several years ago, and then once again about 3 or 4 years ago in Armenia. His passing, of course, has left many people scrambling for words and expressions, because he was really an institution, somebody people talked about here in America. I'm on the West Coast, and you know, America has a span of about 3,000 miles, so it's not just like it's the next door town. But we had heard about him, and he was one of the first American-born, if not the first. But I know, I believe that belongs to somebody just before him. But Father Dajad was one of the first American-born Armenian clergymen. And I know that I was with Archbishop Vacha yesterday. He was talking about the early years when he had come to Antilias. So he had studied in Antilias, and he became a priest in the Eastern Diocese, served in the Eastern Diocese, and then the remainder of his life, the last 10, 15 years, he served in Armenia. Actually, I'll read you a short little bio in a couple moments. But I just wanted to share this because Thoreau, why did I pick Thoreau to remember his life? Well, we had a chance to meet him back in 1988. Susan and I and our son Vodajan was just about 2 years old. We went to a friend's wedding. I was going to officiate at a wedding there in Watertown. And we got there and we met Father Dajad, who was so warm. Another priest coming from the West Coast to his turf, he was going to show him around. And that he did, I got to tell you. Unlike, I don't think there could be a better tour, a tour guide anywhere. I mean, he knew American history. And you got to remember that the American Northeast is really the birthplace of the United States. So we'd be going through from town to town, whether it was Concord, whether it was Boston itself, you know, and he'd say, the Minutemen were over there, and this is where the Revolution, Paul Revere, and he was pointing out different places. Really, really fascinating, because you could tell that it wasn't just a class he was giving. He was living out the American Revolution. And, you know, if you've listened to this podcast, you know the connection there, right? Like the Declaration of Independence and being in my office. And actually, just a sidebar, Aaron Brothers, if you've got a couple of days, Aaron Brothers is going out of business. I just bought a brand new frame for that declaration just yesterday. Anyway, I digress like I always do. Anyway, so he's sharing with us all this information about the American Revolution, about patriotism, but not the phony pride patriotism. It's a genuine, I don't know how to describe it. As he's talking about history, it's coming alive in front of us. And then he takes us to Walden Pond. Wow, that to me was a very special moment. I mean, this is the place where Walden was written. The name of it, Walden. Henry David Thoreau. And you know, when you're in college, I don't know about you, at least for me, I mean, this is one of the staples. You're on a diet of Henry David Thoreau. Or maybe I should say back in the 70s, back in the 70s, but I can't leave it there. I know Walden is a classic, not because I read it in the 60s, but because generations have had this as a steady diet. I mean, we used to eat this up. Listen to this, just one little piece here. It says, Walden is a perfect forest mirror, set round with stones as precious to my eye as if fewer or rarer. You know, we used to eat this up. It was great. He'd talk about individualism. He'd talk about our connection with nature, with things around you. I mean, a lot of times when I think about what it was, and by the way, later on in the show, you're going to get another little bit of piece in the puzzle of how Armodoxy really evolves, because I'm going to share with you a very special moment that took place back in 1973. Yeah, we're going to look at an unusual story, very usual, I should say, a story you've all heard, but unusually presented. And all these are like little clues as I look on my life, and I know a lot of you do in the letters that you share with me. This is a moment of introspection of like, how did we get to this point? Why do we believe in the things that we do believe? And certainly Henry David Thoreau was one of those writers that has inspired so many of us. Just his essay on civil disobedience is something that inspired generations. I mean, really, it's at the bottom line of the civil rights movement, about protest movements right now. Did you catch that in the Time magazine article? Just this week, they named Nikol Pashinyan in Armenia, the Velvet Revolution that took place a couple months ago. They named Nikol Pashinyan is one of four people on the entire planet, right? Out of 8 billion people, he's one of four people who's keeping democracy alive, the dream of democracy alive. Yes, I'll definitely put a link on today's show notes. Do check out that article. It makes you proud, you know, that democracy's coming about not by bullets, not by killing, but by a silent but potent revolution, the Velvet Revolution. Have you listened to me for the last 10 years? Have we talked about not fighting fire with fire, not increasing the violence, but finding means of moving forward, finding means of understanding, of respect? And of course I'm excited. Of course I'm excited that the world is pointing to this small little landlocked nation, Armenia, as really a place where democracy, the dream of democracy, is continuing. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, tell me, you have been listening to me. I mean, are you connecting dots over here? And certainly when we get to Walden Pond, you read Walden. This is one of the early books that inspired me, that kept me believing that despite all the pressure to be like everyone else, there is a value in your uniqueness, in being the person that you are. Because around me, I was fortunate enough to have some people that were of this caliber. people who were truly individualists and, well, in Thoreau's words, following the beat of a different drummer. And so when Father Dajad took us there to Walden Pond, this was like a couple years after college, and I get excited because this is a place that I was relating to. But now, in his passing, I found this small passage that I shared with you a couple moments ago from Thoreau, but it made me realize that we don't talk enough about this. We don't repeat it enough. We take it, we process information, but because information is flowing at such a fast pace, we don't really enjoy it. It's akin to eating something and savoring the taste as opposed to just swallowing it for its nutritional value. And if you think about it, the enjoyment that we get out of food, it's an enjoyment that begins at our lips and literally 3 or 4 inches away it ends, because that enjoyment is only translated by the receptors on our tongue, right? Once it goes down the throat, it's over. It just becomes caloric intake meant to stimulate your body and give your body that energy that it needs. But the enjoyment of the food is really a process that begins at your lips and it goes to the back of your throat. And so for those couple moments, you have an option to savor it. You have an option to chew a little bit more. Let that enjoyment of the food stick with you for a few moments before it goes down, right? Well, the same is true of our inspiration, right? Whether it's religious inspiration, secular inspiration, political, whatever it may be, flowery, poetry, it's an inspiration. You read the Bible passage and you get inspired, and then what happens? You kind of like put it away. You let it go down the throat and now it's processed. Okay, yeah, it gives you a little bit of energy, but you haven't savored it. And you need to go back to it. I think here's the value of rereading, reading, rereading, of redefining, of evaluating, of really putting your hands in there and kneading the dough. For instance, Henry David Thoreau. During my time, during college time, you would walk into people's dorm rooms, apartments, and you'd see posters. I had one of these posters too. It was very, very prominent, the poster about the drummer. And I thought about this morning, how long has it been since I've pulled that out? Not the poster, but that passage. And yet that passage really says so much about who we are as a generation, as a people. Why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. Why my priesthood has evolved into the priesthood that it is. Why religion matters to me. Why my Christianity. Why the Armenian Church. Why Armenian Orthodoxy. Why Armidoxy? Henry David Thoreau. Why should we be in such desperate haste to succeed and in such desperate enterprises? If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. It is not important that he should mature as soon as an apple tree or as an oak. Shall he turn his spring into summer if the condition of things which we were made for is not yet? What were any reality which we can substitute? We will not be shipwrecked on a vain reality. Shall we with pains erect a heaven of blue grass over ourselves, though when it is done we shall be sure to gaze still at the true ethereal heaven far above, as if the former were not? Yeah, it gave us, it's savoring, you gotta let it go in, absorb, let it knead the dough a little bit, use whatever metaphor it takes, let it stick on your tongue for a while, let the receptors be receptive. these aren't meant to be taken, you know, in a moment. And I thought about this moment as I was looking up the Walden Pond and remembering how important it was. It wasn't like you would read it on a Facebook post. It wasn't like somebody would put it on Instagram. Definitely not Snapchat. This isn't a fast one for us. No, it took time. The beat of a different drummer. It's okay to be different. It's okay to go at your own pace. Yes, there will be people who will excel and go faster. It's okay if you're not as fast. That individualism of who you are, the respect for life. And so Father Dajad took us to Concord that day. He showed us that place. And today, in his passing, I'm sitting there thinking that, you know, this is a beautiful reality that we have just let escape us. They pass away. Whether it's Concord, it's an Etch Miadzin where you see Christ descending. I mean, lately we've talked about these beautiful shrines in Armenia over the past years and the vortexes. Remember when we went to Sedona, they talked about vortexes, places where energy. And when we went to Armenia, we found vortex after vortex, basically the cradle of civilization. And you find that, you know, there is special energy. Well, when you get there, you can't just walk over it. It takes a while. Give yourself that time. Give yourself time to savor the moment, the flavor, all the aspects of it. Think about the most simplest of foods that you take into your body. When it enters your mouth, you have the option to really gulp it. Or you have a moment to let it really, as you chew, to think about the different flavors. And yeah, there's enjoyment in some of those flavors, isn't there? Okay, same thing with thoughts. Same thing with inspirations as they come into us. And they inspire us, not like a meal, which satisfies our hunger for the moment, but those inspirations continue throughout lifetime. And so here I am, the passing of Father Dajad Davidian, giving me an opportunity to reflect, to savor some things that we've lost, we've forgotten about. He took us to Walden Pond, gave me a moment to think about what Walden, what Thoreau meant. Father Dajad was one of the first American-born priests. Let me share with you, there's some quick biographical sketches. I'll put this on the show notes as well so you could read his entire story. He was born in Worcester, attended theological school in Cilicia, the Catholicosate of Cilicia, in Antilias. And he was ordained in deacon in 1957, and as a priest in 1960 by Archbishop Sion Manoogian. Wow. Okay. 1969, Father Dajad was assigned as pastor of St. James Parish. That's the one in Watertown. And he faithfully served until his retirement in 1999. Retirement for Father Dajad, however, only meant the beginning of a new chapter in his ministry, as he began to spend most of his time in Armenia, where he was actively engaged in preaching, teaching, and organizing new parishes in our homeland. He also organized and directed youth groups in Armenia, performed pastoral ministry with the poor, handicapped, and elderly, and conducted Christian preaching and education. And they have some, in this link that I'll share with you, there's some articles, and you could even see a video of him talking about his move to Armenia and his experiences there. Now, fast forward. I had met him once in 1988. Fast forward, 2014. I'm in Armenia, and I get an invitation to preach at the Gatoige Church. This is that small little Armenian church that's now in the shadow of St. Anna's. Actually, St. Anna's was being built. That's the residence of the Catholicos in Yerevan. The St. Anna Church is huge. It's actually the Ani Hotel. Yes, you're right. That's right. Thank you. Next to the Ani Hotel and on Sayat Nova Street. So there's a small little church there that I personally enjoy. In fact, whenever I've gone there, it's one of the churches that I like to go, because when I was a seminarian back in 1977, during the communist era, this small church was hidden. You couldn't see it. It was hidden like in almost a forest, right there in the middle of Yerevan. They had trees, they had shrubbery protecting this small church, because, of course, the communists were, you know, they didn't care about religion, especially religious artifacts, and there was the plowing of many of our religious shrines. So, anyway, like I said, fast forward 2014. I'm there. I've gotten an invitation to give the Sunday sermon at this church. So we attend. It's Sunday. There's the Badarak. And there's Father Dajan. He's sitting in the courtyard. You know, I go and introduce myself to him, and of course, you know, he lights up, somebody from America, and now he starts telling people, this is an American-born priest. He starts, you know, taking a pride. I was so honored. We go into church, we celebrate the Divine Liturgy together, we are there together for the duration of the liturgy, and when it comes time for me to give the sermon, and by the way, this altar was pretty high. It was pretty high, and it was such a small church, so it's noticeable. That increment of height is very noticeable in relation to the rest of the church. So I get up on the altar. Now Father Dajad gets up to the people, and he's so well-loved and respected among the people there that they all quiet down, because now Father Dajad's going to talk about who this guest is. And like I said, I was very honored. It gave me a nice introduction, and I proceeded with my sermon of the day. And I'm saying this because, you know, this is the kind of person that he was. This is my experience with him. And so many people, I posted a small little picture of us on Facebook. A couple hundred people commented about him. And I've been looking. He was just well-loved, well-respected, here in America as well as in Armenia. Father Dajad, the life that was unique. It ends with his physical death. It continues with all these beautiful memories. Even people like me that only had a chance to meet him on a couple occasions, inspired, and his life lives on. May God rest his soul and grant comfort to all of us. I'll have some more on our show notes. I'm going to take a break right now. We'll play the song of the day. When I come back, I'm going to share with you something that I guarantee that 99.9% of you have never heard before. Yeah, you'll have to wait for that, and I'm going to share with you why it's so important. We're doing some retrospect today. We're going back to Thoreau. We're going back to the 70s. This will really kick you back into the 70s. Anyway, for right now, how about a little Gomidas? I feel like Gomidas right now, okay? For the song of the day.
So
Anush and Inka are Shakyan. Going by the name Anush and Inka usually, right? They're just first namers. Anyway, a little bit. It's called a Gomidas medley. Melody of Gomidas. Different Gomidas. Riffs. Different Gomidas melody lines. I hope you enjoyed it. I needed that. I needed to kind of like center myself. I'm going from Walden Pond. I'm going to go to some bizarre places in a few minutes. Gomidas right in the middle. I hope you enjoyed it. Anyway, we will have a link on today's show notes to always check out our links. There's all kinds of stuff on there that you'll find about things that we talked about throughout the show. But definitely there's always a link to one of the songs that we feature every week. And we ask you in return that you check. If you like the song, you know, go out there and support the artists, because starving artists are always those kind of artists that we need to support, and most of them are, despite the fact that we have some really, really wealthy artists. No, most of them have a rough time. They sell a piece of themselves and their art. Let's be supportive of that. Be back in a couple of moments with something really unusual, okay? Okay, we're going to take another step in a step back in time, and we're going to go to 1973. I just graduated high school. A lot of stuff going on in my life. I've shared with you in the past some of the things that were really consuming my life, and of course, music was a very big part of it. We had just experienced Woodstock, though I wasn't there, a little bit too young for Woodstock, but still, the repercussions of Woodstock were great. We were hearing about it. There were musicals, there were musical expressions. Jesus Christ Superstar had come out in 1970. But just a little bit before then, I was introduced to progressive rock. I was introduced to prog rock, and especially to improvisational rock. Groups like Cream. To me, Cream was just incredibly out there, just beyond belief, that three men, or just a drum, a bass, and a guitar, could make such incredible music. I mean, you listen to some of the things that Cream plays back in 1968, you're not talking about big electronic marvels. You're talking about people with talent. Ginger Baker on the drum, Eric Clapton on the guitar, and of course Jack Bruce, who we just lost, I think, last year he passed away. Talents that were improvising, that were playing around with music in a new direction. And this goes with my Armenian background too, which had a lot of improvisational melodies in there. When you listen to the likes, we were grown up on a steady diet of Middle Eastern music, such as Richard Hagopian, and you'd listen to them and they'd go into these improvisational moments for several moments, several minutes, whether it's on the oud, the kanun, clarinet, wow, yeah, even drums. Yeah. And so when something like an Inagada Davida comes out in 1968 and they have this drum solo in it, 17-minute song, you go, well, okay. We've done that. We have Armenian improvisational kef. You know? So to me, this was like a second nature. So along comes a group that I was connected to, still connected to, Jethro Tull. 1968, they were born 50 years ago. And here comes this Pied Piper playing the flute out on one leg, and who had really just was giving a lot of cool things to me. He was being crazy without all the craziness of rock stars. He had eschewed drugs. It wasn't part of the drug culture, though, you know, everybody thought he was strung out on there. And it's only now, 50 years later, that he talks about it. He never made a big campaign about anti-drug, though he was never on drugs. Probably why he lasted so long, okay? This is Ian Anderson I'm speaking about. Throughout the different incarnations of Jethro Tull, it's been different over 50 years, 33 or 35 different artists have performed
in various spots. But Ian Anderson, of course, continues playing the music of Jethro Tull. But 1973, unusual year because, well, let me go back one more year, 1972. We'd been used to this improvisational idea, especially because of the Armenian Middle Eastern culture I had grown up in. And then to hear it like in groups like Cream, or when you got an Iron Butterfly, you know, playing Inagata de Vida 17 minutes. Beatles came out with a 45 record. Now, these 45 discs would have one song on one side, the other song on the other side. They'd be referred to as A and B sides. They were about 2-3 minutes. Beatles came out with a song called Hey Jude. It was 7 minutes. How are they going to fit it on a 45? They did. We used to wear out the needles. We'd wear out these vinyls listening to them over and over again. Prog Rock, 1972. Jethro Tull had put out Aqualung in 71. It had gotten reviews that it was a concept album. And Ian Anderson said, okay, you want concept album? Put together this concept album, quote unquote, called Thick as a Brick. Man, not one side of an album, two sides. 45-minute song. And we'd play it. In fact, I still play it. Especially, it's just fantastic driving music. You go on those long trips on those interstates, you listen to that. Wow. The following year, 73, they came out with a one called The Passion Play, which spoke to us in many levels. It was the song of, well, it is the Passion Play. It was the song of life about starting off. And I went to the concert. It was the first Tull concert I had been to. I was 17 years old. We were just graduated at the Inglewood Forum. And at that time, Led Zeppelin had played 5 nights at the Forum, and we were just excited as Tullies, people who were listening to Jethro Tull, that Jethro Tull had exceeded the Led Zeppelin maximum. They had opened for a 6th night. So we were like, so, you know, our group did 6 nights, you know, at the LA Forum. And if I remember right, I remember going to 4 out of the 6 of those concerts. And the last night, my friend Steven and I, we got there, and we didn't have tickets. And we bought scalp tickets for $5. I'll never forget this. It was $5. We bought these tickets outside, got us in there, and then we went to look for the seat. And we kept going up and up and up to the nosebleed section until we found out that those seats didn't exist. Yes, they were forgeries, counterfeits, whatever they were. But we were in the Forum, and we had a chance to listen to the concert while strolling around. So, okay, so here we are, and it starts off, the Passion Play, with this heartbeat. And we're watching to this big pulse on the screen. They had a big screen up there. Never forget this. And this pulse was being visualized with this small ball that was increasing in size, getting bigger and bigger, and pulsating to a heartbeat. Boom, boom. Boom, boom. Until this giant ball turned, you know, this white ball turned into the form of a ballerina. And there was a ballerina on stage, on this big screen, who got up and started dancing. The Passion Play. And soon the lights came on to the thunderous applause. Jethro Tull appeared, Ian Anderson, with his flute in hand, playing. And I remember, this was my first year of college, I remember my first English class that year. I wrote about this experience of being at the Jethro Tull concert, the Passion Play. A Passion Play! That put together concepts that were important to us. I wasn't the only one. The Forum, 6 nights in a row, being packed, Los Angeles, Jethro Tull. And there, you know, what is it, 20, 30, 40,000 people at a pop? And he's talking about concepts, about religious-themed concepts. Flee the icy Lucifer. Oh, he's an awful fellow. What a mistake, I didn't take a feather from his pillow. Here's the everlasting rub.
Neither am I good nor bad. I'd give up my halo for a horn, and the horn for the hat I once had. You know, the struggle about you're wearing a hat. Why is there constantly a struggle between the halo and the horns? Who are we? What are we? What are we doing here? The very fundamental questions of life coming at you with melodies so complex. They were touching the inner core of your soul. And in the middle of this song, the Passion Play, he stops. Now, it wasn't until I saw him in concert that I realized why this appears in the middle. It becomes a perfect break for the band. It's a 5-minute little stretching period, because how do you play 40 minutes in one sitting? Well, in the middle of it, they shared the story of the hare who lost his spectacles. And I'm going to play it for you right now, because this is an unusual, this is exactly 45 years to this week that he released the Passion Play, that Jethro Tull played it the summer of 1973, 45 years ago. I was there. And I want to share with you the story of the hare who lost his spectacles, which, by the way, when I was teaching in junior high religion, I would use with my young kids, because it talked about some very fundamental issues of what's important. I want to share it with you. It's a fun little story in a very heavy British accent, but you'll get it.
This is the story of the hare who lost his spectacles.
Owl loved to rest quietly whilst no one was watching. Sitting on a fence one day, he was surprised when suddenly a kangaroo ran close by. Now, this may not seem strange, but when Owl overheard kangaroo whisper to no one in particular, "The hare has lost his spectacles," well, he began to wonder. Presently, the moon appeared from behind a cloud, and there, lying on the grass, was hare. In the stream that flowed by the grass, a newt. And sitting astride a twig of a bush, a bee. Ostensibly motionless, the hare was trembling with excitement, for without his spectacles, he appeared completely helpless. Where were his spectacles? Could someone have stolen them? Had he mislaid them? What was he to do? Bee wanted to help, and thinking he had the answer, began, "You probably ate them, thinking they were a carrot." "No," interrupted Owl, who was wise. "I have good eyesight, insight, and foresight. How could an intelligent hare make such a silly mistake?" But all the time, Owl had been sitting on the fence, scowling. A kangaroo were oppy mad at this sort of talk. She thought herself a far superior in intelligence to the others, as she was their leader, their guru. She had the answer, "Hare, you must go in search of the optician." But then she realised that Hare were completely helpless without his spectacles. And so Kangaroo loudly proclaimed, "I can't send Hare in search of anything." "You can, Guru, you can," shouted Newt. You can send him with Owl. But Owl had gone to sleep. A newt too much to be stopped by so small a problem. You can take him in your pouch. But alas, Hare was much too big to fit into Kangaroo's pouch. All this time, it had been quite plain to Hare that the others knew nothing about spectacles. And as for all their tempting ideas, well, Hare didn't care. He lost spectacles for his own affair. And after all, Hare did have a spare. A pair. Bear.
Can you imagine in the middle of this rock concert, you know, 20, 30,000 people, the counterculture, 1973, in the middle of this rock concert, playing a passion play with all kinds of heavy rock and heavy metal and just beautiful music coming at you from all directions, everybody stopping and watching this children's story, or so it seemed, right? This children's story. And by the way, I'm going to put on today's show notes the video of this, which didn't resurface for about 25 years after. I think it was on their 25th anniversary DVD that I saw it for the first time in all those years. And it's pretty bizarre. But it was perfect for my class that I was teaching. Anyway, take a look at it. You'll see. It's timely. Yeah, it goes back. But it was very important. The Hare had a spare pair. How simple is that? You know, when you ask where are we coming from with Armadoxy, think about what we teach over here. The idea that, you know, we have to look for new metaphors. We have to look for new ways of expressing concepts that are real. And look at this, a very simple, seemingly children's story of the hare who lost his spectacles. People giving him answers. The guru, he can guru. He can give him an answer. You have it in your pouch, but it's not there. No, maybe you lost it. Everybody giving you answers when all along you have a spare pair. When all along the glasses are there, you can see. You can see perfectly. You can see normally. You can see what you want to see. You just need to know that the spare pair is always with you. That it's in your right. You have it there. That, yes, it's just as clear as the original pair. And, you know, this kind of story is an important story to be told. And I wanted to share it with you, my Next Step listeners. I'd love to hear your comments on it because it's something unusual. It's something you wouldn't hear unless you were around in 1973. And if I'm not mistaken, from what I've read, I think they only played it one time after that and probably the last time ever in 2011. Yeah. So it's like almost 40 years, 38 years afterwards, they played it. I've heard a concert where he alludes to the fact that this has never been played since 1973, and there it is. So here it is, a story with a message, a modern-day parable, the hare who lost his spectacles. Very simple story to tell a simple truth that all along we do have spare pair. You may lose your way. You may be unable to see things correctly. You may be getting answers from different people. You may be hearing different voices telling you about what the truth is and the direction you need to walk in. But all along, you have the answer. It's in your pocket. You have it. It's right there. What Jesus calls the kingdom of heaven. It's within and without you. Yes, there is a part that's without you. Connect to it and you'll find what's within you. That truth that guides us. The story of the hare who lost his spectacles. I wanted to share it with you some 45 years after it first broke here in the United States and I guess worldwide. It was on July 13th, 1973. And so as we're developing, we're moving in Armadoxy, think about the things that approach us, whether it's a Thoreau that gives us this inspiration by looking at a pond and pondering the idea of our individuality and our humanity, or whether it's the story of the 12 young boys who were saved along with their coach from a cave. It becomes a new inspiration. I shared with you last week the idea of martyrdom. It's not a Christian idea. It's not a religious idea. But that one man who put on his equipment and gave his life for the 12 others who were in that cave, he became a martyr because his life was not in vain. His life was given for the sake of others. Those 12 kids, their coach, was saved thanks to the martyrdom, the sacrifice made by that one individual. That is salvation. That is how salvation happens. There is a sacrifice that is given and we are saved. And so each of these stories, whether it's the hare who lost its spectacles, the story of Walden Pond and finding that serenity at the pond, or whether it's the new stories all around us that we need to just be open to and receptive to, become the new metaphors, become the new way of how we look at life. They're the same stories. And Jesus puts his finger on each of those stories in very simple terms. We sometimes don't understand them when we think of them as irrelevant because we are unable to allow it to savor in our mouth. Give it a couple minutes. And that's why I tell you, the religion is not this fast answer. This is why I kind of get tired of seeing social media and people like, hey, this is this, you know, I just found this new truth. And yeah, that truth will last you for 2 seconds. It's like gulping your food down. You're not letting the food sit in your mouth and let it, and give it a few moments to enjoy the different flavors that are attacking your senses and making you alive at that moment, right? Yeah, you can gulp food down. It serves its purpose. You've got the nutrition. You've got the calories to burn and so on and so on. But the enjoyment, the idea of you learning, the idea of you savoring, and so it is with religion, with faith. It's the opportunity to look and take a moment to see that in all this beauty, in all these little stories, we have opportunities for growth. For instance, one of my favorite stories is a Hans Christian Andersen story. The Emperor's New Clothes, where an emperor is conned into believing that these clothes that he has are so incredible. And the people believe only because they know they have to believe, because that's the way to go. In fact, the emperor didn't have any clothes. And it was a young child who looked up at the emperor and says, "The emperor's naked." Now you think about that in terms of religion. Where we are, when you look at the emptiness of religion, a lot of times being followed by the masses, taking the time to look at it and saying, yeah, it is empty. There isn't anything there. It's a great story. I'll put that one on the show notes too. If you haven't read The Emperor's New Clothes, it's an old one. It's by Hans Christian Andersen, just as the hare who lost his spectacles. 45 years, Hans Christian Andersen, maybe 145 years. Jesus Christ, 2,000 years. Am I equating all of them? I'm telling you that these are means by which greater knowledge is passed on to us. Relax, take a breath. No, I'm not equating Jesus, the person of Jesus, with anybody else. But what I'm saying is that there are opportunities for us to wake up to the humanity that is all around us. Anyway, I have spoken enough about this in the past. I wanted to share this small little story with you today. I hope you enjoyed it. Here's Susie. She happens to be in Baltimore, Maryland today, producing from across the states. I'll be back to tell you where I'm going to be this week. Some exciting things. I'm going to be out there on the East Coast too with some exciting people. Coming up in just a moment.
before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Ah, Susie, you sound like you could be just right next door, all the way in Baltimore. And thank you for taking the piano player with you. That was very kind of you. Hey, what Susie says is so real. We thank you for your support and always look forward to your comments. Please drop us a line at Apostle. It's feedback@apostle.net. And you can follow us at all the usual spaces on the different social media platforms. This following week, I'm going to be out in the Poconos, Pennsylvania. My first time out there. We're going to be going out there to teach, to share with the Indian Orthodox. This is the Syriac Orthodox community. They're having their annual family and youth gathering. And I'm sorry if you want to go. Sorry, it's sold out. There's about 500-600 people going, and we're looking forward to it. I'm going to have a chance to be out there in the East Coast, and looking forward also to meeting with the new primate out in the Eastern Diocese, spending a few moments there at St. Vartan Armenian Cathedral. So we're looking forward to this trip, and we ask for your prayers. And always, I know I could count on your support, but keep us in your prayers. That God give us the strength and the energy as we embark on this next phase. I don't know if we're going to be able to podcast from there. We're going with the plan of podcasting. It will depend whether we can, if we have internet connection. I understand it's up in the mountains that has certain restrictions. When I think about being up in the mountains, it gives me a different idea, but you never know. We might have internet connection, in which case we will definitely be podcasting from the Poconos. If not, we will definitely have something prepared to go out for you, so do look for us next week. A lot of stuff happening. I'd love to hear from you. feedback@apostle.net. But with that, let's call it a day. Thank you very much for listening. On behalf of the wonderful people who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of apostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off, but I'm top with it.